Okay, good morning, everyone. Very happy Thanksgiving to each and every one of you and your families. And thank you all for joining me for this week's learning, this week's edition of Insights into the Weekly Parsha on this beautiful Thursday morning here in South Florida in Boca Raton. This week's Parsha is Parshas Vayetze. For those of you who would like to follow along with us in the Art Scroll Blue Stone Chumash, page 144, page 145 in the English, we are excited to discuss and to learn together. But first and foremost, I am grateful for the sponsors of this morning's Torah class. This morning's Shir is generously sponsored anonymously for the Refuah Shalema, for the speedy recovery of Sar Rivka Bas Chaya. In the merit of study Torah, she should have a speedy recovery. And generously sponsored by Dr. Mark Brandris and Nancy Eisenberg, in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Mark's mother, Rabbanit Perla Brandris, Rabbanit Perla Blima, Basarav Yitzchak Meir Hakain Vitaba. Thank you both so much for your sponsorship. Again, in the merit and zechus of studying Torah together, Barabim, it should be a zechus, a merit. It should be an aliyas neshama for her and a zechus for your entire family. Thank you for your generosity. So glad to be able to learn together for those of you who are joining us here in the Boca Jewish Center Zoom room and those who are joining us in various other portals of social gathering here on this beautiful day. We have a jam-packed parsha, very important and insightful thoughts to share this morning from the commentaries. Let's begin with the notion of the encounters and the many of which Yaakov Avinu has, the very beginning of the parsha, the encounter that Yaakov Avinu has with the malachim, with the angels, as they are perceived as olim v'yoredim bo, and the holy place for which he falls asleep, for which he encounters this holy makom. It's Shar HaShamayim. This is the gate of the heavens. And at the end of the parsha, again, where he encounters the angels upon his now re-entry into Eretz Canaan, leaving Charan after the years of serving Lavan, his father-in-law, and acquiring his family, his wives, his children, etc., of course, as we know. But there's another encounter that I want to draw our attention together in our learning here this morning. We read in this parsha the encounter that Yaakov Avinu has with the shepherds of Charan. And this encounter that he has with the shepherds of Charan is very, very significant to a very important life lesson that is so applicable in every day and at all times, but especially now, especially in the times that we live in, and especially important as we try to gain perspective of how to perceive hope and promise and a perspective forward. So the encounter that he has with the shepherds of Charan upon his arrival at the well. And of course, we know that the well, the Be'er, is a place that is significant in our Bible, in our Torah. There is this meeting place. I'm mindful of my grandparents who would often tell me of the places that they met each other, whether it was at the roller rink or whether it was at the JCC or various other places that they would find themselves. And in our Torah, of course, I have a number of times, number of instances where the well, the Be'er, plays its significant role in the matchmaking place where the biblical personalities, the avos, the imos, the patriarchs, the matriarchs find themselves. And this is no different. Yaakov Avinu has this encounter. It's not just that he's going to meet Rachel at this place, but he has this preliminary encounter with the shepherds. And this encounter with the shepherds is very significant. He arrives at this well outside of the city. And the pasuk that Torah tells us, Vayisa Yaakov Raglov. Yaakov, he lifted his feet and he arrives at this place. And he goes, Vayelech Artsa V'nei Kedem. And he arrives and he comes to the place, to the land of the people of the B'nei Kedem, to the place of the east. And he looks, Vayar, he sees, he perceives, and Vayera and Vayar, of course, a word that is also so significant, repeated time and again in Sefer Bereshis, Vihine Be'er Basoda. He sees, behold, that there is a well. He sees it in the field, Vihine Sham Shloisha Edreitzo. And he sees that there are three flocks of sheep. Now they are Revtsim Aleha. What is Revtsim Aleha? It means that they are lying beside this well. Now, what's the reason why? Now, because from that well, of course, they would water their flocks, Pasuk tells us, but there was one problem, one huge roadblock. What was this obstacle? What was this roadblock? This huge stone, this rock, this Evin Gedola, this great rock, which was Al Pi HaBe'er, which was on the mouth of this well. So it seems as if this delay or this gathering of the Edreit Tzon, the three flocks of sheep that were lying beside it, there was some delay, there was some pause, there was some reason why they were gathering together. And it seems from the pasuk that the reason why they were gathering is that there was this large rock and they needed to be able to water their flock after removing this rock. Yaakov Avinu, of course, he notices that the shepherds had brought their herds to the well. Now, what he also realized, the commentaries Chazal tell us, that this was interesting to Yaakov because he saw that it was still the daytime. And what he perceived should be the activity of these herdsmen during the daytime is that they should have their flock, they should be grazing in the fields. Why are they, you know, staying close to the well? He assumed that they were ending their day because it seemed that they were, you know, bringing them in to water them, bring them back to the town, even though it was still early in the afternoon. And he says to them, and this is very curious, you know, imagine that you come to town, you find yourself in a new location, and you see that this can happen in a multiplicity of ways. You come to a new place, you come to a new town, and you feel that you have something strong, robust, meaningful to share, something to say. And the commentaries point out that this is extraordinary about the character of Yaakov Avinu. What does he say? So he looks at this scene and he sees these shepherds and he sees them gathering around the well and he sees that it's still the middle of the day. And he says to them, the day is still, it's still day. The day is still long. What are you doing? The day is long. It's not time to take in the livestock, water the sheep and go. Meaning it wasn't just that he perceived that they're going to come to the well, grab, you know, a quick drink. They're going to be watered and then they're going to go, you know, they're going to go back to pasture. It seemed from what he perceived that they were going to be watered and they're going to go back as if the day was over. This is what he perceived. He saw them. Rashi tells Lafisharoi some roivtsim. Now Rashi says, what was it that Yaakov Avinu saw that it was encouraging for him to say something? That he saw that they were lying down. Wasn't just that they were standing off to the side. They're waiting in line patiently to get their drink at the water fountain, right? They were waiting, but they were laying down. And that laying down was an indication, he thought, that what they wanted to do is they wanted to, Rashi says, they wanted to gather their livestock together. They wanted to be, you know, watered. And then what they would do is they would return home and they would no longer graze. The day of work was over. And he basically said, Amar Lehem, Hein Oid Hayom Gadol. You should know, what are you doing? The day is still long. There's still opportunity to graze. There's still a lot of work to be done. Now, there's two interpretations of what Rashi presents here, citing the Medrash Rabbah. He says that there's really two, you know, moral thoughts to consider here. What are the two moral thoughts to consider? The first is, Kalayma Im Schirim Atem. If you have been, you know, there's two different ways that a person is hired or a team of people are hired to do work. Imagine, you know, for example, you're doing work in your house, you're doing construction. So there's two different types of workermen that you hire. The first is called bekablonus. Bekablonus means I hire you, contractor, workers, I hire you to get the job done. I haven't indicated the specificities of how long and how much time and which specific days you have to get the job done. I just want you to get the job done. So I've hired you for 3 weeks to get the job done. I've dropped off my dry cleaning at the dry cleaner and I want to pick it up on Tuesday. I don't know when you're going to do it, but I know that the bookend from when I drop off to pick up is that's your time to do it. You do it when it's appropriate. Now, I don't have to worry about the things you do inside that time, which would mean that if, let's just say, you did something on Shabbos, it would be a violation of Shabbos. Well, with the exception, of course, of being Maris Ayin issues of whereby it would be seen or perceived, the optics of that would be less becoming of how a person of Ben Torah, you know, a Jew is supposed to act. Independent of that, the concept of kaplonis allows me to be able to have this higher and over a period of time versus what Yaakov Avinu is referring to is, one second, there's something called, the second type of hire is called a schir yom. What's a schir yom? A schir yom is I've hired you a day worker. And the day worker is hired from sun up to sundown. I've hired you for today. And so therefore, if I've hired you for the day of Shabbos, for example, in contemporary application, so of course I can't hire you for Shabbos because that which I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do. I'm not allowed to hire you to do what I myself can't do on Shabbos. So that's this idea of a schir yom. So Yaakov Avinu says, the way the Medrash quoted here in Rashi says, Amar Lehem, Hein Oid Hayom Gadol. You should know the day is still long. There's still a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of things to do. Kolaymar, Im Schir Matem. If it's true that you are workers that are hired for the day, what are you doing? It's like you're cutting out on the obligation today. Imagine you have a 9-to-5 job and you finished your work So the expectation of the employee is that the employee is going to keep working throughout the day. Not that throughout the day you're checking your social media, going into your emails, you're doing personal things, you're doing other jobs off to the side, you're taking an extra lunch break beyond the one that you had. No, it's the expectation is that the work that you've committed to, that what you've been hired for that day, is the work that you're going to complete, the tasks that you're going to do throughout the course of the day. So he's saying, I don't understand. Number one is, if you've been hired for the day, you haven't completed the work. That's one thing. The second thing that Rashi says, however, if it is v'imha behemos shelachem, and if the animals actually belong to you and you weren't hired to do anything as a representative of anybody else, but these are your behemos, one said, what are you doing? Shelachem. Afo pikein lo eso yisef amikna. You should know, it's also not a time to take in your livestock. Now, why would it matter to Yaakov Avinu if something belongs to somebody else, and I comment about how you're handling something that belongs to you? Why should that matter to me? Why did Yaakov Avinu feel that it was his place? Here he's a perfect stranger. He's never met these people before. And now he says to them something that they themselves should act with their own property, with their own edreit zon, in a way that he's not satisfied with. Like, what does he see? What message is he trying to convey? What communication is he trying to tell them? What is it that bothers him? And a message to them is as equal a message to us today. And it's this idea of something that is your own. And what is our own? Our own is our time. It's how we spend our time, how we utilize and use our time, how we spend our time focused on our goals. If we've identified our goals, what is it that we do in our day that will reach the goals that we've set for ourselves? Not lying beside the proverbial well, waiting to be watered, waiting for us to, you know, have the luxuries and then to go back to the place of the abyss, but rather seems so. And we're going to see why this bothered him so much by some of the commentaries we're going to learn together here now. But it seems from these two interpretations of what Rashi explains is going on. The first is, number one, this ethical, you know, loss here. There's an ethical misunderstanding of what you're supposed to do. It's not appropriate. When somebody hires you for something for the day, you got to do the job until it's done. Don't cut corners. Don't, on somebody else's dime, somebody else is paying you, think that it's appropriate for you to cut corners. Not okay. That's not wrong. But the second, and this is where we're going to focus our attention here as a life lesson for all of us, and we're going to tie it back into Thanksgiving, how we can feel thankful for the things that we have and the things that we sometimes overlook and not necessarily express that gratefulness as readily and as responsibly as we otherwise should. And that is the things that we own, the time that we have, the properties that we're responsible for, the possessions that are ours, the families that we are tasked and demanded to care for. Your property, your behemoths, your animals, it's shelachem. It doesn't matter. I have something that I want to share to you. Now, I'm not saying that you should go to shul or go to your place of business or to your Thanksgiving dinners, see things that you perceive that other people are doing that are not 100% glad kosher, and then start getting into this, you know, this rhetoric with them. You have to do it carefully and precipitously. You have to be discerning of who you are and who it is that you're talking to. That's a topic for another time. But just to understand this very important message, Yaakov Avinu, he says, Afal Pichein, it is not the time to bring in your livestock. Let's understand what that means. Like, why should he care? Why would it matter to him? So the Sefarno explains a very interesting idea. What does the Sefarno say? The Sefarno says, Hatzadik, a righteous person is Yimas, that a tzaddik finds that there's something that is Yimas. What is Yimas? That it's disgusting, it's painful, it's perturbing. It's something that bothered him greatly, because when a righteous tzaddik person sees something that's not supposed to be the way it's taking out, it's an oven. It's something that's painful. There's an oil that he feels is so heavy. So he thought they were shirking their duties, that their responsibilities were just not taking place. You know, whenever you see somebody, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. If you really care about what they're supposed to be doing, A, either because of their own shirking their own responsibilities for their own ruchnias, their own successes in life. But if we understand that we as the Jewish people are united, connected, we need each other. If you're shirking your responsibilities, it affects me. Some of the commentaries explain what the Sefarno is saying. Why does it bother a tzaddik? Is there just an altruistic righteousness? Aleph, it could be. But Beis, is that there's something intrinsic about a Jewish person shirking their responsibilities, and the pendulum and the shift of the axis of where we ourselves are able to have that merit for all of us, for humanity, actually, in addition to just our peoplehood, is that there's an impact and there's an important perspective that is gained by realizing to what extent even if one person is shirking their responsibilities, we're so interwoven, so interconnected. When there is one person, when there's one entity, when there's one fraction, when there is one faction for which there's a shirking of responsibility, it's yimas. It's perturbing to a tzaddik, to a righteous person. He thought they were shirking the responsibilities. The righteous are disturbed by the injustice, even when they are not the victims, because a righteous person realizes it's true. It doesn't affect me individually. But maybe it affects you. I care as a righteous person about your success. Why should you care about my success? That is the idea, the precept, the concept, the notion of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeb, is that we are guarantors for each other. I don't want to just get ahead in business, in my spiritual success, in my family, you know, accomplishments. I want you to also share. And even though there's jealousy, kina, taiva, that is, and covet that's motzianis ha'odam min ha'olam, one of the great, great skills that a person has to learn is that your success is independent of somebody else's failures. You want everybody else to be successful around you. Why shouldn't you want other people to be successful? You don't want one shul to be better than another shul, one business to be better than another business, your family's success to be better than somebody else's. And if in fact we do, there's something lacking in your own self-confidence. Know what you are, know what you do, know how you proceed, and be confident and be successful in the areas that you, not by virtue of the fact that other people will fail. In fact, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the great leader, chancellor, Rosh Hashiva of Yeshiva University for decades, and the man who is credited for ensconcing the concept of Torah Umada in a way, not only in writing, but in practice. He shares in the introduction of his book, Festivals of Faith, where he talks in the entry of Shabbos HaGadol, the Shabbos that we celebrate before the Umtav of Pesach, explains what does it mean to be Gadol? What does it mean to be great? There's two different ways a person can be great, to rise above the fray, if you will. The one way, which is the lowly way, is for a person to shove, to push somebody down. When a person, they're standing as equals, you push somebody down. So I'm Gadol, I'm great, I'm higher, I'm elevated, higher than the person that I just shoved to the floor. That's how I become great, on the lowest level, on the worst level. But then there's another way, having nothing to do with my hands touching somebody else, or even psychoanalytically putting somebody down in the emotional sense, in the pejoric sense. But there's another way, he says, that you know how you elevate over somebody else? You just stand on a chair. You rise yourself up. And by standing on that chair, that person remains on his level, but you are elevated and you are Gadol, you are great. And on that Shabbos of Gadol, and on every single instance where which we are a Gadol, we are a great nation, a great people. We are meant to be great, to inspire greatness within and from without as well. That greatness is not a function of how we wish others to be not successful. We want others to be great, successful as well. Stand on a chair with me. Let's all be great together. And so therefore the righteous are disturbed, says the Sefarno, by the injustices that take place, even if we are not the immediate victims of those infractions, of those injustices. Because when an injustice is in the world, there's an injustice that affects communities. And when there's an injustice that affects communities, it affects municipalities and countries and manhood and civilization, humanity, to a margin for which the significance is so great. Something that we take into consideration. And therefore, ve'ameich kulam tzadikim, you think to yourself that that's reserved for a Yaakov Avinu, that he's the righteous person. I'm a simple person. And the answer is, you have to carry yourself in the world of humility, hubris, a sense of anivus, humility. Yes, gaiva is the antithesis. Arrogance, the antithesis of humility, of anivus. However, the ameich kulam tzadikim, the righteous, we all are, says the prophet, says the Navi, that we are all meant to be, and we all have that righteous. And so therefore, that righteousness that lie beneath and within us, that injustices that we perceive, that we see, we rise up, we raise our voice. And even though we're not the immediate victims, it might not affect me. Rabbi, why do you care? Or person A, person B, C, why do you care? Doesn't affect you. The answer is, if it's wrong, it affects you. It affects me. It affects us all. That's what this farmer says. That's number one. But here's the second answer. The Chizkuni writes in his commentary that you should know. So why should he care? Lama hayo li Yaakov lomer lehem kol kach? Why should he involve himself in this? Like, what? Come on, mind your own business. You come to town. Now you're gonna go into the bakery and you say, you know, actually the Boston cream pie, you know, the pies, the donuts, the type of coffee you sell, I think that you should use this ingredient or that ingredient and arrange it in the store this way. Thank you very much, Yasher Koyach, but take a hike. So what's the reason? Lama hayil Yaakov lema lahem kol kach? Why does, says the Chizkuni, Yaakov Avinu care so much? Why should a stranger like this dare to order these shepherds around as if he were their employees. Wasn't like he doesn't work. He's not their employee. He's not the employer. They're not his employees. Come on, what's happening? So Elo says this Chizkunim Misyare Ayashema Teleich Lo Rachel Imaroin. He was scared of something. You know what he was scared of? He was scared. Don't forget. The pasuk says, "Vayomer lehem Hashalom lo, Vayomer Shalom v'hinei Rachel bito boi matzon." After he asks the shepherds, like, how are things with Lavan, my uncle? My mother's Rivka, and she sends me to Uncle Lavan. How are things with him? Is he well? Is he safe? Oh, yeah, you should know that not only is he well, things are going well, but you should know, v'hinei Rachel bito boi matzon. You should know his daughter Rachel is coming. So when he perceives her, says the Chizkuni that he perceives her, he wanted to talk with her. He wanted to engage with her. As we know, in the short order, they do engage in some, you know, matrimony of some sorts, right? So he sees her. He perceives her. He wants to engage her. And he wants to speak with her, says the Chizkuni. He was frightened. He was worried, wary. Misyari, he says, haroim. You know what he was scared of? He was scared that Rachel is going to go with the other roim, with the other shepherds. Why was he scared? The Chizkuni says he wanted to speak with her. He wanted to talk to her. He wanted to get to know her. He thought that maybe, you know, he's on a shlichus from his mother to go to Choron, to now live in the bias of love and to save himself from his marauding and rebelling brother Esav, who wants him dead. But of course, he also knows that if he's going to live there and he's going to stay there, he's going to perhaps find his intended, he's going to be at this well, and now he knows history a little bit, and he's going to see there's a Rachel that's coming, it's his uncle, now this is his first cousin, maybe it's his wife, who knows, he's taken by her Yifas Mara, he's taken by her beauty, her essence, her Mahus, her Neshama, and he wants to engage with her, says the Chizkuni, because he wanted to speak with her, he was worried, he was afraid that Rachel would join the shepherds, whereas he was interested in having a private conversation with her. So again, number one, you have the Sepharno that he just finds it disturbing by the injustices, even though it's nothing to, you know, has nothing to do with him directly, even though he's not a victim. And even though this, according to this one, has nothing to do with Rachel, the Chizkuni says, and the Pasuk says, he saw her, v'nei Rachel bito bo, im hatzoim, Rachel's coming with the flock. And now he wants to speak to her, he wants to see her, and he was worried. So therefore he says, why don't you guys get going? Get back to your thing. And so therefore, I'll have some time to speak to Rachel. That's the second interpretation. I want to share with you the third. The Arachayim HaKadosh writes as well, what is the reason why he says to them, the day is still long, get to your action, get to your deeds, what's the story? So he has two other ideas in mind. And this is just fascinating. Whenever you learn Chumash, you learn the Bible, and you learn the commentaries, why you have the Mikros Gedolos, and you have the Toras Chaim, and the various fascinating and extraordinary commentaries on Chumash, you really get to understand the story. You know, we all understand and know, perhaps have learned many, 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 many times, the story in the topical sense. But we understand the Amkus, the under the layer, the drill deep down of different perspectives as to what's happening. Here you have the Sephoni of the Chizkuni, and now I share with you the Archaim. What's in the mind of Yaakov Avinu? What is it that he's thinking? So there's two things, says the Archaim. Taima Shanasa Shaifet Lahem. The reason why it's interesting that Archaim uses the word Shaifet, he's like the judge of their actions. He's concerned with what they're doing. Why? It says, Hulitzad Tsar Balechaim. Because you know why the Gemara in Bava Metzia is quoted here in the Archaim, which says that he was worried that there was an unnecessary suffering of the behemoths of the animals. What's the Tzar Balachayim? They needed to be watered. What are you delaying? Why are you making them suffer? Why are you making them be around here? Like, what are you doing? That's one possibility. He's like perceiving this and even the concern. And by the way, this is not uncharacteristic of the great Manhigim, the leaders, Moshe Rabbeinu, of course. Chazal tell us, the Medrash elaborates, that how was it that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Rabbeinu was identified as the Manhig Yisrael, as the leader of the Jewish people? Very simply, because of the flock for which he was tending, he was the shepherd, and his one little sheep, Shepsel, was cast away, runs away to the side, he runs off to the side. We're all familiar with the story. He picks it up on his back, carries it. If you are going to, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, about Moshe Rabbeinu, if you are going to be so discerning, so careful, so conscientious, so worried about the one shepsel, the one sheep, al-achas kama v'kama, how much more so you're going to be concerned about my children, about humans, about my B'nai Israel, about the Israelites. And so therefore, clearly that concern was significant. So therefore we see that this seed of where Moshe Rabbeinu gets and gains the concern even for animals, that which is an animal, achas kama v'kama, to human beings, Moshe Rabbeinu, that's an attribute perhaps that he that he learns from his ancestry, from his forefathers. He absorbs that. He knows that. He nurtures that, nourishes that. From Yaakov Avinu says, there are chayim, his words, tzar bala chayim. What are you doing with these animals? Why should you care about the animals? Teretz is when the tzaddikim, the righteous ones, live on this earth, they know that animals are the creation of the Ribbono Shel Olam also. It's therefore you don't cause an animal to suffer. Chas v'shalom, al achas kama v'kama v'kama. How many times? All the more so human beings as well. So that's number one. Also, the second thing is he wanted to find out, what's their delay? Why are you delaying the flock? Ma'akfin haya. What's the reason why? Because he wanted to realize, here, I can make this determination. If the reason why you're delaying, says the Archaim in the second answer, is that the town, the place that you're from, it's not that far away. And so therefore, they're supposed to be kept in the town. They're going to be brought back home. It interested him because it would help him determine the distance that he traveled or he had traveled, right? How far do I have to go? He learned from the shepherd's answer, you know, that they did not, you know, what they said, that what they did was not related to the distance from Haran. So that means he was just trying to figure out his coordinates, his longitude, his latitude. He was trying to figure out, where am I in my travels? If, in fact, you're doing this, must it mean that you're not too far from the town? And if you're not too far from the town, so that I know how far I've traveled or how much further I have to travel. I'm just trying to understand my GPS, my coordinates. I'm trying to understand the first Waze ever, W-A-Z-E, the first Waze was Yaakov Avinu trying to determine his coordinates in the second interpretation of the Rechaim. So here we have Rashi's interpretation, the Sforno's interpretation, the Chizkuni, the Rechaim, two different pshatim, just the Amkus, the understanding of this, the Pashuk pshat, and there's what lie beneath the surface, understanding, there's what we see, there's what we read, and then there's more to the story, and there's always more to the story, friends. There's always more than what seems, there's more than what meets the eye, not just because Transformers have coined that, but there's more that meets the eye to the extent that a person has to look for the story, understand the story, what's beneath the story, what is the real true definition of the story. Sometimes we draw conclusions about things even though we don't know the whole story. And if we don't know the whole story, here we draw conclusions about things. And what happens when we're erroneous, when we're wrong? Oh, we feel foolish, we feel silly, we feel flawed. And therefore it behooves us to get to the fullness of the story, no matter whenever what it is. Now the shepherds explained to Yaakov Avinu, here's what's happening. Now back to the Pashuk Pshat, is what they were doing is they weren't ending their day. What they were doing is that they're waiting for all the other shepherds to come together. Why? Because as I mentioned earlier, the Pasuk tells us that the well was covered by an Evin Gedola. What's an Evin Gedola? By a very large stone. And that large stone could only be removed if everybody came together, if all of the shepherds were able to come together. Now with the Chedrush, there's a nice limud to that, which means there are heavy things in life. There are heavy stones that block the water. The water is daima l'Torah, the flow of spirituality. And sometimes the only way that block of that flow, of that water, of that Torah is able to promulgate, is able to emerge, is not only the heroic superpower of Yaakov Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu and the various other manhigim of the generations of yesteryear and today, but those heavy Evan, the Avonim Gedolos, Gedolim, those great and heavy stones, are able to be removed when there is a unity, when there's a gathering of people who come together to remove those stones. So what the Poshet Pshat, the simple explanation, what the shepherds did, they were saying is, no. It's interesting. They don't say, like, mind your own business, buddy. But what they say is, no, the reason why we're here and what we're doing and why we're waiting is because this Evan Gedolah is just not enough strength in my body to remove it. We need everybody to, all hands on deck, as we like to say, when all the shepherds come together. And that's what they say. In Pasuk Ches, Vayomer lo nuchal. We cannot do that. We're not able to water our flocks. Until all of the flocks are gathered together, and then all of us, we will be able to roll the rock over off of the mouth of the well. And so therefore, vishkinu atzon, and Rashi explains, then they'll be able to water the sheep. Why? Shakos. As mentioned, that since the stone, the rock was huge, it was heavy, it was unable to be lifted by a singular person, everybody's going to come together, and that's what's going to be. And this is the episode as it takes place, Pashup Shat, deeper limud, deeper understanding. But here's a creative explanation that we're going to now take this on a different level, a different explanation of this whole episode, this whole study of this whole encounter with the shepherds. It's cited by Yisrael Taub of Mojitz. I've mentioned him before in the Divrei and his beautiful writings in Divrei Yisrael. He quotes in the name of his great-grandfather, Reb Tzvi Hirsch Taub. And this, again, this is part of the Mojitz Rebbe, Divrei Yisrael, deep Chassidus Torah, beautiful lessons, life lessons, applicable lessons, something that also maybe is not seen on the chitzonius, but is a little bit more pnimius of the inside, the neshama, the soul, the mahus, the essence. So he explains the following. What do we know? We know that at the beginning of our parsha, so he encounters, again, the angels. But before he encounters the angels, what does he do? Vayifka b'mokum vayolin sham. Now these words, vayifka b'mokum, the Gemara in Brachos, of course, tells us, from where do we learn the source of tefillah? Do we learn tefillah davening from the karbanos? Do we learn it from the time when the offerings took place in the Beis HaMikdash? Or do we learn karbanos from the Avos Tiknum? So we understand from various psukim that Avram Avinu Vayashkem Avram Baboker, that Avraham was with alacrity, woke up in the morning. We learned Shachris Yitzchak, Nisuach Basoda, he was in the field in the afternoon by Mincha time. We learned Mincha from Yitzchak. And of course, Vayifka b'mokom v'yolin sham Yaakov Avinu and Tfilas Arvis. Kiva Shemesh, Vayikach me'avne ha'mokom v'yosem erashoysav, Vayishkav b'mokom ha'hu. Pasuk tells, of course, that he arrives at this place. Now, if you just think about it, as Rashi is going to tell us in a moment, the sequence of how we read this verse. He arrived at the place. He lodges at this place. Why? Because the sun had set. Now, it would seem, as Rashi is about to tell us, it would seem that the reverse would be best set. The sun would set, and then he arrives at, he decides to lodge at a place. Like, why do you stop your travel? If you're driving, let's just say, from Florida to New York, and you're going to decide that you're going to take lodge after the sun sets. You're not going to, maybe some would choose for just other stamina purposes, but you'll decide that I'm going to drive all the hours that it's daylight outside. Now, it says in this reverse, I arrive at this place and then the sun sets. We'll see what Rashi explains that to me. And he takes some of the stones, that the Avne HaMokom, the stones of this place. What's this mysterious place? So we'll see, Zeshara Shemayim. And he placed them, Vayosem Merashoysav, he puts them on his head. Now, you know, the pillows that we sleep on at night are soft and comfy. And the pillow that he placed his head on is replete with meaning. But he places these stones as the pillow that he lays his head, and he lays down in this place. Vayishkav b'mokom ha'hu. Now Rashi explains, cites the famous midrashic tradition, the Mesorah, that the night before, of course, when Yaakov slept and beheld the famous dream, right? Remember the ladders olim, that the malachim are olim v'yordimbo, that the ladder, the sulam, is hashamayim, it extends to the heavens, right? So the sun set early. And that's the reason why we say that he went to this place and then the sun set. The sun sets early before the time for sunset, before the time for sundown. That's what Rashi explains. Really, it could have been that really they could have said, the Pasuk should have said in the reverse order that the sun set and then he stays overnight. Now, what's the expression Kiva Shemesh? Rashi tells us, why does it say that the sun sets in the order that it's presented? It implies Mashma Shaka Lechama Pitom. You know what it means? It implies that the sun, it set suddenly, pitom, in a flash, suddenly for him, not at its usual time, the sun set suddenly for him. Why? So that he'd have to stay overnight there in that spot. What is this holy spot? So the Medrash explains that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted Yaakov Avinu to sleep in that specific spot, in that particular spot. What's this particular spot? This particular spot is the future site of the Beis HaMikdash. And so he had set the sun, pitom, quickly, unusually, when Yaakov Avinu reaches that site, so that he could not continue traveling and so that he'd be able to sleep in this spot. He wanted this place to be perceived as Zeh Shahar HaShamayim. This is the holy place, the gate of heaven. Har HaMoria, this is Beis HaMikdash, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni. Please God, Amir Tashem, Bayis Shlisha. This is the place of Akedas Yitzchak. There are so many reasons why this place is so special, so holy to us as a people, to humanity, to the world, but certainly to us as Jews. The Ribbono Shel Olam Medrash explains, wanted Yaakov Avinu to sleep in this particular spot. And so therefore, it's not that the normal that the sun set and then he finds lodge. He finds lodge because the sun had set pitom, unusually. Now, in quoting his great-grandfather, in the Divrei So says the Modrit Sod Rebbe the following. He suggests that this is a beautiful interpretation, that when Yaakov Avinu saw the shepherds appearing to end their day, so he assumed that the shepherds anticipated another early sunset. He realized that maybe what they thought was, since night had fallen earlier the previous day, it was like an unusual occurrence, but it happened nonetheless. So Yaakov figured that in the shepherds' minds, a permanent change occurred in the natural order. The teva, the nature was interrupted, that everything was changed, and that the sun, perhaps in their minds, he thought, that the sun would be setting earlier from that day onward. And what they were doing is they were anticipating that the sun was going to set and that their day was going to be over. And so therefore what he did, he approaches them. And this is what gives them him the audacity, if you will, the spiritual holy chutzpah, the holy audacity to approach them. Why does he approach them? He approaches them to clarify something to them, that the sun had set early yesterday, the day before, the previous day, for a very specific reason. It was unique to him. Now, I don't know if he shared that with them, but it was a specific day, a specific reason. It was a unique circumstance. And this unusual phenomenon did not herald a permanent change. This did not mean that now this is the new order of the world. This is not what was going to be. And he felt it was his compelling obligation to tell them that even though it seems as if you are setting yourself up, that the day is going to end early as it did yesterday, now this is the new order of the day. So no, that was yesterday's activity. That's not today. That's not tomorrow. That's not what's onward. Don't think that what took place yesterday, that necessarily means that that's what's going to be a now permanent change. But here's the depth of this level of understanding. This is the depth of this very witty reading of the story, this nuanced approach and interpretation of this reading of the story. And this is so applicable to our lives. It's so necessary for us to understand, because what happens is that oftentimes when we experience darkness, like the shepherds who experienced an unexpected darkness, when they're here, the sun is shining, the day is regular, and boom. Imagine you're out enjoying a picnic, a barbecue, you're out with your family, and it's a glorious sunny day. And then all of a sudden, pitom, it becomes with rain clouds, or all of a sudden it becomes nighttime. You're like thinking, like, what in the world is going on here? That's in the physicality. But here's the panemius hatayra. Here's the essence of this. Here's a deeper understanding. There are times in life, and sometimes for some, it feels often time. And sometimes when you're dealing with multiple months, almost, you know, too unbearable of feeling like you're in a circumstance that you wish you could wiggle out of, emerge from, months and months of a situation that, oh, how can it continue and persist? When will it end? When it seems as though the sun is setting on our efforts, on the things that we want to, need to, and yearn to do. So what happens is we feel very discouraged. We feel very set back. We feel very reluctant to move forward. We feel very, very set and determined to do something when the sun is shining. When balelos, the emuna that a person is supposed to have is not when the sun is shining and it's so easy to perceive things. Your test of religiosity isn't always when it's just so easy to do that. Your test of religiosity is oftentimes when it's the most difficult, when the challenge stands in your way, when the roadblocks are before you, when there are things that dissuade you and otherwise require this heroic effort and energies that are needed to be able to be determining what it is that you truly stand for. So when there is this, in the proverbial sense, the sun that sets on the efforts that we want to do something, we know that we should do something, we are engaged in doing something, but we feel discouraged, we feel reluctant to move forward, we feel held back, when our efforts feel that they are fruitless, we question our abilities to begin with, and we begin to wonder if perhaps what it is that failure is our destiny. I tried this, I can't do it. I opened up the Gemara to begin Maseches Pesachim, and today we're up to what? Daf Hey, and now I missed it. I missed Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, now I'm up Dalet. So I've missed what I'm up to. I've missed now, I'm not able to continue because failure maybe is my destiny. I tried to daven with Kavanah, but I can't. I'm not able to be charitable because I was thrown off by this irritable person. I'm not able to be successful in my business endeavor because look, how many times have I tried? Well, one of the most unbelievable things that I learned from Rav Noach Weinberg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the chief architect, builder of Avesha Torah, which is at the pinnacle of outreach in the world, in the Jewish world, where there is extraordinary classes and study hours and hours at the heart thump of the nucleus of epicenter of the world in Yerushalayim, right across from Har HaBayis. One of the things that he told me is people think that he was just successful at the first go at it. You know, Eishet Torah was his first, you know, you open a business and the business thrives and look what happens. You become a worldwide entity. He said, no. Eishet Torah was his fifth yeshiva that he started. And I was thinking about that, like, so impactful. Fifth, that means you started four previous yeshivas, and each time previous, they failed. You opened it, you got a dorm, you hired a cook, a chef to cook for the bachrim, for the students. You hired Rabbeim. You figured out 8 hours. You did it once. It closed. It folded. Second time, closed, folded. Third, fourth time. I mean, what happens? What gives you the strength, the courage to be able to decide, I'm going to try a fifth time? Most of us, you fail once, you're not going back there. Twice, for sure. Now, three times, forget about it. Four times, and then the fifth time, and now look, this thing, people don't remember or think about the people that struggled through and that were determined to be able to get to the successes that they hearkened and planned and wanted. It isn't necessarily filled with rosy, successes right away for most people. Rare is that the situation. There's setbacks, there's putbacks, there's shortcomings, there's failures. There are things that just don't go your way. Sometimes your business closes. Sometimes you have setbacks in your business and you have to like kind of get back to the think tank and really recalculate, recalibrate what works, what doesn't. And then you're able to get back. And if something didn't happen in the world of spirit of bodybuilding and physicality and business and bizes a pecha toich alechem, so much, of course, in the world of spirituality. It didn't work out so well for you in that spirituality experience. But that's not a reason to stop trying. That's not a reason to give up. That's not a reason to throw in the towel, to fold, that's it for the day. Fold up the crates and now I'm going to go on with my day. No. We have to realize that failure is not our destiny. To be triumphant over those challenges is our destiny. That is the story of the Jewish people, friends. That is the story of who we are. That despite the darknesses and the evils and the misfits and the antagonizers and the setback after setback after setback, we have become a people that are persistent and determined and inspired. And despite all of the difficulties that are sometimes associated with the successes that we yearn for and the successes that we gain and the successes that we have, so failure can never be accepted as our destiny. Triumphant. Person has to be triumphant. And that is that intense, intense commitment to being able to overcome, to dominate, to weaken those forces, those darknesses that are in our lives, to weaken those demonic forces, to overcome and to be able to be successful despite them. That is the narrative of the Jewish people. That is our destiny. When darkness overtakes us one day, we might feel that this will happen next day and the next day. No. Says the Moshe Tzur Rebbe that this here applies to us, Yaakov Avinu's instructions to the shepherds of Haran. As he said it to them, he is saying it to us, the day is still young. It is not yet time to bring in the sheep. Don't think that because yesterday it was dark, that today it's going to be dark. If your efforts did not succeed in the past, this does not mean that we should discontinue our efforts in the present. It does not mean we should stop trying. The early nightfall, if you will, the unexpected failure that we encountered yesterday, it doesn't discourage us today. I had a bad day yesterday or the day before. That doesn't mean that today that I'm not going to have a great day. I'm going to be thankful. I'm going to be appreciative of every single breath and every single encounter and every single relationship and every single opportunity we encountered what we did yesterday, even if it was failed. It does not discourage us today. And even if yesterday was dark, even if it was gloomy, even if it was nightfall, Emunas Chabalelos today could very well be the bright and successful day that we want it to be. So rather than allowing our failures to discourage us and lead us to end our day, right, to give up on the day without investing further effort, I saw somebody posted on social media that they're already planning to take a nap tomorrow, right? Because you already know that tomorrow is, I'm gonna need to take a nap. What do you need to take a nap tomorrow? Tomorrow you're going to be so busy from beginning of the day, from Modani Lefanecha to Birkas Hamapil. You're going to be mamish tearing it through the day. You're going to be successful in every possible way. We should, as Yaakov Avinu told the shepherds, Yaakov is saying, continue shepherding. And he's telling his children, his descendants, his grandchildren, he's telling us, continue shepherding. Persist with confidence. Persist with determination, pursuing our goals to the best of our abilities, to the best of our slavos, our ability to accomplish, to achieve. Have some energy, have some awake, have some time. This is an opportunity for us to realize that it is not what holds us back, but it's the continuing to shepherd, the encounter that we have with the shepherd. Yaakov Avinu encounters the shepherd. Yaakov Avinu is encountering us. The encounter that we listen to and that we look at and that we read and we internalize is the encounter that he has with every one of us when he tells us, don't give up on the day. Be appreciative of what you have tomorrow and the next day and the opportunities that lie before you. And this is why we learn lessons here in our Chumash, in our Parshas HaShavua, that are so relevant and so timely and are so necessary. We live in times that sometimes feel so dark and so gloomy. That's not how you wake up every day, looking at the dark gloominess of the day. There's a dear friend of mine who lives half a year in another part of the country, and he lives half a year in South Florida in our community. If you're listening, you know who you are. He sometimes tells me that some of the messaging that he's been hearing is that it's dark and it's gloomy and it's down and it's sad and it's downcast. And he says he feels that he can't get out of bed and he can't see the world in a positive sense if he's constantly hearing that messaging. No. The messaging is constantly what we have to continue to share. He's saying that that messaging he's hearing in the news, he's hearing it from other locations, he's hearing it from different people. And the message that we have to continue to tell ourselves is we have to continue. That perseverance is a Jewish attribute. That is who we are. That persistence, that confidence, that determination, the pursuit of our goals to the best of our ability, no matter what. And that's why when we think about today, Thanksgiving Day, what's Thanksgiving Day? You know, for us as Jews, Thanksgiving Day is a day that we greatly appreciate. It's like Mother's Day or Father's Day. My mother often would say to me every year on Mother's Day, Mother's Day is not one day of the year. Mother's Day is every single day, right? I've mentioned that before a number of times. What is Mother's Day? What is Father's Day? What's Thanksgiving Day? These are a Yom Iyun, as we say. It's a day of deep appreciation. We stop in our tracks and we expect ourselves to reflect, not just on what it is that we eat physically, but what it is that we digest spiritually, what it is that the day means to us and how we express that gratitude. I'm so appreciative of this. So many people that send me text messages, emails, just this morning, they're grateful for this and they're grateful for that. And it's an extraordinary expression. Imagine if you spend your day expressing that gratitude to your parents, to your grandparents, to your spouse, to your children, to your grandchildren, to your friends, to your family members, to people in your community, to maybe even people that you don't really get along so well with, but there's something about them that you can appreciate. That's an amazing day. So Thanksgiving Day is a day which we as Jews appreciate immensely, not as a once a year celebration, even though it gives us pause and an opportunity to express that. We experience Thanksgiving three times a day. Modim anachnu lach. We give thanks to you, Ribono Shel Olam, Shachris, Mincha, Ma'ariv. In fact, it's actually more than three times a day because Modim Derabanan, we say in the Chazaras Hashatz at Shachris and at Mincha, on Musaf, on days that we say Musaf, right? The idea of giving and expressing our gratitude, giving thanks, Hakaras HaTov, is a cornerstone concept of our faith. We give thanks and we give ourselves the opportunity to appreciate all of the things that we have. This day and actually every day gives us an opportunity to give thanks to the Ribono Shel Olam, the master of the universe. Modim anachnu lach, we say with an intensified vigor, thank you, Almighty God. Thank you, Hashem, for the blessings of our lives. Are there difficulties? Are there shortcomings? Are there impairments? Are there things that we feel so, that there's such struggles for us? Sure. Let's not focus our attention on those things. Focus on the blessings of our lives. Thank you, Ribono Shel Olam. Thank you, Ima, Abba, Mommy, Daddy, Mommy, Tati. Thank you so much for the blessings, the opportunities. Thank you to our beloved Eretz Yisrael, the homeland of the Jewish people. Thank you to the United States of America, which has given us home and space for us to have religious freedom, to have the liberties for which we sometimes, oftentimes, way too often take for granted. To the people in our lives to give thanks. When you are a thankful person, you are a different person. And then when a person is a different person, thankful, appreciative of all the things that we have, three times a day, five times a day, Hakaras HaTov, gratitude and thanks today and every day, our lives are enriched. We are humbled. We are spiritual. We are grateful. We are people who realize that there is life worth living. And we are people that are grateful for the people who helped us, shaped us, and brought us the places that we are. There's a favorite story that I like to share. I've shared it in the past, but I want to share it again because I think this is really something that highlights everything we're learning. We're going to close on this. I love this story about the great inventor, Thomas Edison. Everybody, of course, knows who Thomas Edison was. And I just want to share with you just a short little, there's a different versions of how this story is told, but it's an important story. It's a special story. And this is the gratitude and this is the gratefulness. And this is despite the challenges and what you can create and what you can become and what it is you can do, expressing your gratitude, overlooking those obstacles, and being positive. Listen to this. I love this great story of the great inventor Thomas Edison. One day, as a small child, Thomas Edison came home. He came home from school and he gave a paper to his mother. He came home with a little something for his mother. And he gave it to her. He says, Mom, my teacher gave this paper to me and told me that you, mommy, are to read it. So he says, what does it say? You know, a child gets a paper home and he gives it to the mommy from the teacher. It looks like a parent-teacher report. So the child is curious. He's overwhelmingly curious. He wants to know, what does it say? So this mommy, she opens up, Thomas's mother opens up this letter, and her eyes well up with tears. And she's so emotional. And she reads the letter out loud to her. She says, "Your son is a genius." And you see Thomas's little smile. Your son's a genius. This school is too small for him. It doesn't have good enough teachers to train him. He's just too great. Please teach him yourself. He's just extraordinary. And this mother, she's welling up with tears. And she's so emotional. And this Thomas, he's thinking to himself, this school, they're just not big enough for him. Yeah, sure, he's a genius. They think he's a genius. This is the mother's right. So many years after Thomas's mother had died, he became one of the greatest innovators, inventors of the century. Now, one day after his mother died, he was going through a closet, going through her belongings, and he found that folded letter that his old teacher wrote to his mother that day many, many years ago. And he opened it up and he read it. And the message written on that letter was very different than what his mother had said was written on that letter. The letter was written by the teacher with the following quote: "Your son is mentally deficient. We cannot let him attend our school anymore. Hereby, as of now, he is officially expelled." He didn't know what to do as he's reading this letter. He became highly emotional when he read it. And later on in his diary, he wrote, and I quote, "Thomas A. Edison was a mentally deficient child whose mother turned him into the genius of the century." So incredibly powerful. What parents mean to children, what grandparents mean to grandchildren, what teachers mean to their classrooms, what all of us really mean to each other when we think about the righteousness and the rightful ways for which we encourage others. Just think about the inventions and the innovations. Think about the confidence and the successes. If we are able to just change the narrative, to read it as we wish it to be read, sometimes other than the way it seems to present itself and is written. When we write those scripts, when we change our perspectives, we gauge ourselves looking at the scene as it is and use these opportunities to learn from our teacher, Yaakov Avinu, as he talks to us and we to our descendants, our classrooms, our families, our people. When we do that, we live very, very enriched lives. And in so doing, we inspire tons of people along the way. We use this day to express gratitude to those in our lives and the land to which we live. And of course, mindful of our beloved homeland, our beloved Eretz Yisrael. When we take these messages to heart, we internalize the beautiful lessons of our Parshas HaShavua. We are uplifted and we are truly, duly inspired along the way. Ken Yehi Ratzon V'Nomar Amen. Thank you all so much for listening today and joining me in our learning. Thank you again, Mark and Nancy, for your generosity and your sponsorship. Aliyas Neshama. Thank you to our anonymous sponsor for the Refuah Shalem, Sarifka Bas Chaya. Thank you for joining us, me today here in the Zoom room. And for those who are joining us on social media via Facebook Live and via YouTube, I wish everybody a beautiful day. Happy Thanksgiving to one and to all. A beautiful Shabbos Kodesh. Everyone should be healthy, safe, happy, and well.